Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. Hello and welcome to this deep dive. Today we're immersing ourselves in a novel that, well, it really struck a chord when it came out. Gail Honeyman's Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine.
Huge debut.
Right, a Scottish author. And this 2017 book wasn't just a bestseller. It managed to be darkly funny, a sharp social commentary, and a story about psychological recovery all at once.
And it's quite something how seamlessly she blends those, isn't it? It's not just, you know, a quirky character study. It digs deep into loneliness, into the long shadow that childhood trauma can cast.
Yeah, you can almost feel her background, can't you? Law, charity work.
Yeah.
It gives the observations this sharp, sometimes painful edge.
Definitely. That realism is key.
So our mission today really is to get under the surface. We want to explore how Honeyman uses Eleanor's voice, that very formal, sometimes unintentionally hilarious voice, as a kind of shield.
A narrative shield, yeah, exactly. To tackle these really heavy subjects, loneliness, abuse, the stigma around mental health, and to map out Eleanor's incredibly difficult path towards, well, just connecting with people. Okay, so let's paint the picture. When we first meet Eleanor Oliphant, she's 30, she's a finance clerk in Glasgow, and her life is just meticulously structured to avoid almost all human contact.
All routine.
Total routine. The same meal deal every single day, tasks scheduled down to the minute, and crucially, two bottles of vodka every weekend.
To numb everything.
Pretty much. The silence, the sheer emptiness of her solitude, it's profound.
And she keeps insisting it's right there in the title, isn't it? Mm. And all through her thoughts that she is completely fine.
Mm.
But the whole book is about that claim colliding with, well, messy reality, human connection.
Right, and her only regular interaction, these weekly phone calls with her mummy, and they are just awful.
Deeply unpleasant, is putting it mildly.
Absolutely. Manipulative, belittling, just venomous. It's like this constant drip feed of the past abuse, keeping her locked down emotionally.
Okay, let's really get into Eleanor herself, because she's such a fascinating contradiction.
She really is.
She has this incredibly sophisticated vocabulary, almost archaic sometimes. She's clearly very intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, she's completely baffled by the simplest social cues, you know, office birthdays, small talk.
Yeah, she's pedantic, very literal-minded, quick to judge everyone else's grammar or, like, their life choices, which, okay, makes for
so her journey, her arc, it's not just about finding romance or something simple. It's this incredibly slow, painful thawing process.
Mm, very realistic.
And she has physical scars, too, doesn't she? From a childhood fire.
Yes. And they work perfectly as this visible symbol of the much deeper internal wounds she's been suppressing for years and years.
So who or what starts to crack that fortress?
Well, the catalyst really is Raymond Gibbons. He's the IT guy in her office.
Okay.
And he's the opposite of Eleanor's carefully constructed world. He's kind of scruffy, unassuming, but he has this immense patience. And zero judgment. He becomes the novel's sort of quiet moral center.
Raymond sounds great, but is there a risk there?
Hmm.
You know, the cliche of the slightly awkward but kind man saving the broken woman.
That's a really important point, and Honeyman navigates it so well. Raymond is absolutely not a savior figure.
Yeah.
He doesn't sweep in with grand gestures. His role is much more about quiet persistence. He just models normal, healthy human connection, sharing lunch, giving her a lift somewhere.
Simple things.
Incredibly simple things, but they're revolutionary for Eleanor because they come with no strings attached, no judgment. He's just there. A lifeline, really, that refuses to be pushed away by how abrasive she can be. And speaking of pushing away, we need to talk about the other key relationship, that shadow antagonist, Mummy. Mummy. Yes, she's less a character, more a psychological force, wouldn't you say?
Definitely.
Pure malice and control, existing only as that voice on the phone. She really represents that internalized voice of the abuser.
That critical inner monologue.
Exactly. The one constantly telling Eleanor she's worthless, keeping her small and isolated. So defeating Mummy isn't about escaping a person in the present. It's about battling this deeply ingrained pattern of self-loathing that's rooted in her trauma.
Right. So how does the plot start to force these confrontations? Where do the cracks really appear?
Well, the first real disruption to her routine comes from within Eleanor herself, funnily enough. She develops this this intense, totally unrealistic crush on a local musician, Johnny Lohman.
Ah, yes, the singer.
Mm.
She sees him as this sort of ideal escape, right?
Precisely. A glamorous external solution to her internal emptiness. And while the crush itself is completely misguided,
completely,
it's crucial because it actually prompts her first tentative steps towards self-care, or at least changing her outward appearance. The makeover, the new clothes.
She's trying to build a different kind of facade.
Yeah, one she thinks will attract external validation. It forces her, just a little, out of that fortress of solitude.
But the real turning point, the event that throws her into messy reality, isn't planned at all, is it?
Yeah.
It's when she and Raymond help Sammy Tom.
That's the pivotal moment. They find Sammy, an elderly man, collapsed on the street after work. And this involuntary act of kindness helping him together, it creates this unexpected bond between them, but also with Sammy.
And through Sammy, she encounters his family.
Exactly. And suddenly, Eleanor, who lives in this sterile isolation, is plunged into the warmth, the noise, the glorious, chaotic mess of an ordinary, loving family.
Wow. That must be overwhelming for her.
Completely. She experiences genuine gratitude, acceptance, care, things that are immediate and unconditional. And it stands in such stark contrast to those cruel weekly calls for Mummy. That tension just builds and builds.
Until it breaks. Which happens brutally at Johnny Lohman's concert.
Yes. The fantasy just shatters. She sees him for what he is, shallow, self-absorbed, and the entire delusion she'd built around him just collapses.
And this triggers a complete mental breakdown, a suicide attempt.
It's the eruption of all that suppressed trauma. She hits rock bottom, her absolute abyss. And again, it's Raymond.
He finds her.
He finds her, intervenes just in time. He's that essential lifeline. And this finally pushes her into getting professional help. Therapy with Dr. Temple.
And this is where the emotional core, the real climax of the novel happens. Not in some dramatic external event, but in the therapist's office.
Right. And the revelation is genuinely stunning. The truth about the fire that scarred her.
Mummy. Mummy didn't survive the fire.
No. Mummy died in that fire years and years ago, along with Eleanor's younger sister, Marianne.
So the weekly phone calls
were hallucinations. Entirely. A manifestation of severe PTSD.
Wow. So the antagonist, the source of all that ongoing pain and fear, was literally a ghost, a phantom created by her own mind.
It's the internalized voice of her trauma. It's horrifying, but also strangely, profoundly liberating, isn't it?
It really is. It speaks volumes about how sustained abuse works, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The abuser might be gone, but the abuse lives on inside the victim's mind, like a program running in the background, distorting everything.
And it underlines what you said earlier. She's an unreliable narrator, but not because she's lying to us.
No. Her own mind has been deceiving her to protect her from a truth that was just too unbearable to face for so long.
So the ending. It wisely avoids a neat, happily ever after bow, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. Her recovery is portrayed very realistically. It's ongoing. She has to confront the full truth about the fire, her sister's death, maybe even her own role or survival guilt.
It's not about suddenly finding romance, although that deep connection with Raymond is certainly there, and it's important.
It's more about a hopeful beginning. She's actively learning how to live, not just exist. She starts building a real community, that solid friendship with Raymond becoming part of Sammy's extended family.
She replaces that old, rigid structure with something more fluid, more supportive, real human connection.
Exactly.
Okay, let's pull back a bit and think about the bigger messages here. What is Honeyman really saying? We're going to start with loneliness, right? That theme of social isolation.
Oh, absolutely. And Honeyman nails the modern experience of it with that line about loneliness being the new cancer, a shameful, embarrassing thing.
It captures that stigma perfectly.
It does. Eleanor wasn't just lonely. She felt ashamed of it, which made her hide behind her judgments and her routines, pushing people away, making the isolation even worse. A vicious cycle. And the novel's answer, its antidote, seems to be the second big theme. The transformative power of simple kindness. Yes, it makes such a strong case that real healing doesn't come from some dramatic rescue. It comes from those small, persistent, almost mundane acts of compassion.
Like Raymond just showing up, sharing lunch, sitting with her.
Mm-hmm. Those consistent, quiet acts are what finally start to chip away at that fortress she built over decades.
And all this circles back inevitably to childhood trauma.
Mm-hmm.
It does. The book is just masterful in showing how Eleanor's entire adult personality, her whole way of being in the world, is shaped by the abuse she suffered as a child.
Mm-hmm.
It really drives home that psychological truth. The past isn't truly past until you face it, process it, which the book places firmly in the context of therapy and those supportive friendships she eventually finds.
Right. And stylistically, that first-person perspective is everything, isn't it?
It really is. It locks you inside Eleanor's very specific, very formal, often quite claustrophobic worldview.
And because we're seeing things through her unreliable perception, that mummy twist, it hits the reader with almost the same force it hits Eleanor.
Yeah, and it fuels that deep irony in the title, Eleanor Oliphant is complete. That constant denial right up against the overwhelming evidence that she's anything but.
Mm-hmm. And you see symbols reinforcing this all the way through. The vodka, clearly self-medication. The scars, that physical map of her trauma. Even Polly the plant.
Ah, Polly. Her first real attempt at nurturing something.
Exactly. And it perfectly mirrors her own slow, tentative psychological growth. It's beautifully done.
I think the lasting impact of this book, for me anyway, is this powerful plea for empathy. It really challenges you as a reader to look beyond someone's surface oddities, you know, the weird colleague, the person who seems overly formal or judgmental, mm-hmm. and to just consider the hidden stories, the pain people might be carrying. It's a call to replace judgment with, well, with curiosity, maybe.
I think that's spot on. And what really stands out, thinking about it now, is how Honeyman uses that most devastating revelation that Mummy is a hallucination, a ghost, and turns it into the trigger for profound psychological liberation.
Because the enemy is internal.
Exactly. The enemy is internal, which means it can be confronted, dismantled. It powerfully reinforces that idea that real recovery from trauma means defeating that internalized voice of the past, the abuser that still haunts the present.
It really is a powerful, ultimately life-affirming story, a testament to the idea that it's never truly too late to heal.
And that sometimes the simplest act of human connection, just reaching out, can be utterly revolutionary, a real force for good. It reminds us that belonging and care can be found in the most unexpected places, maybe redefining what family even looks like.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.